We understand there are some things that I thought we did pretty well, and there are some things that we need to improve on as we move forward. We had our opportunities to score, you know, and obviously when you do that, you build confidence, but we didn't get it done. So, again, I can tell what we need to get done, and we'll get it done.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dog Pound Report. Green Bay is in the rearview mirror. Atlanta straight ahead on Thursday night. Welcome inside the show. Dog Pound Report, we do this every Sunday morning at 11:30. Always happy to be with you. Nathan Zagura is here. Matt Wilhelm is here. And, guys, let's just kind of go through what we saw quickly. Just your initial thoughts on what we saw Friday night.
Overall, not good enough. I think Hugh Jackson probably wanted them to be more efficient with the football, take care of it, something he's preached the whole time. He had the two turnovers. But at the end of the day, there were a lot of things that were encouraging. Look, Rome's not built in a day. This is the beginning of the Hugh Jackson era. This was just step one. But I thought the young guys, especially the rookies, came out, Emmanuel Ogba, Carl Nassib, handled themselves very well and get you excited about what you've seen. And then you know it's a defensive guy. When you're on the field for 40 minutes.
Yes.
And you still really only give up 13 points. That's pretty good. I thought there was a lot of fight in this team.
Oh, there definitely was. And I think the attitude is different in the building. That's something that we've seen. And I thought we saw that yesterday. But all in all, even all the pregame stuff leading up to the Green Bay Packers game, I knew it was going to look like preseason game number one. And I believe that if you polled all 32 head coaches, if they're happy with their team's performance in preseason game number one, they're all going to have a similar feeling to Hugh Jackson, that it's just not good enough. And a lot of fine things that are going to get done between game one and game two. And I believe that the amount of coaching now that they have film to coach off of is going to be huge. And there's going to be a large stride being made from up until the Atlanta Falcons game.
I walked out of that game saying teaching points. There's a lot of teaching points from that. All right, what did Hugh Jackson think about the game? Well, here's what he had to say.
And we have some work to do everywhere. Like I just told our team, you know, it's good to get out and get in the game against a different opponent, but it kind of gave us an idea of where we are. And we got to get better, and we need to get better in a lot of different areas, and I think we understand that. And we'll go back to work on Sunday, and we'll get after it.
You know, no matter what happened with the entire game, that first play kind of set the stage for what I think is the Hugh Jackson era. You go out, you hit Terrell Pryor, the pass was perfect, the catch was made, you pick up half a field on the first play. I think that's a good way to start things. It may not have ended the way everybody wanted, or they may not have got all the work in they wanted, but what a great way to start that game.
Yeah, 49 yards, Hugh Jackson unafraid. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to try to light up the scoreboard. And by the way, Corey Coleman wasn't out there. Josh Gordon wasn't out there. Andrew Hawkins wasn't out there. So this is a team that's got some weapons, and I like that. The aggressiveness, and this is a team that's going to need to go for broke, I think, over and over again. And I said, we're going to be a chunk play offense. This isn't going to be a 20-play, you know, 12-minute drive offense.
Right.
This is going to be a big play offense.
And I think for a lot of people that might have second-guessed Terrell Pryor on what kind of camp he's really had, even though we've raved about him, it's been Corey Coleman's day, and then Terrell Pryor will come back and make a series of big plays. And I just love that as we question Terrell Pryor, can he get off of a jam? Can he get behind a starting cornerback or any cornerback at this level, at the NFL level, get behind him, and then you see that 4-3 speed and that size and his ability to adjust the football. And I loved also seeing RG3 step back, put that back cleat in the ground, and rip it down the field to his biggest threat. And I think we've learned that Terrell Pryor, to back up what you've said, Nathan, is a lock to make this football team as a wide receiver, let alone some of the gadget stuff and the creativity that Hugh Jackson will bring.
Help me, how did Terrell Pryor get to this spot, though? And I know we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think if you look at all the stories on the team, it's a guy that was cut. And now he's your number one receiver unless Coleman's on it.
When he was back in Oakland and he was a quarterback, they wanted him to play some on the scout team as a wide receiver, and he refused. So what happened is I think he thought he was just because he's a great athlete. He's 6'6". He runs a 4.3, 6.40. You can't teach that. But I think he thought it was going to be easy. And I think he was humbled a little bit. I think when we went to Buffalo, that was probably as eye-opening for him as it was for us. And he put himself and he put in the work. And having a guy like Al Saunders come in, probably the most venerable wide receiver coach in the NFL, come in and work with him, this is because of great teaching and also hard work by Terrell Pryor. He's gotten himself to the point where he is legit.
And he referenced Al Saunders, and that was point number one on why Terrell Pryor's gained so much ground as a wide receiver. I think point number two is the fact that he's finally healthy.
Yep.
You know, last year in training camp, he was given the opportunity, signed by the Cleveland Browns, and he missed the majority of training camp. So the opportunities for him to showcase his ability and size and speed were very limited, and he couldn't even open up at times because the hamstring was bothering him. He's been healthy, and I think that's a key factor in why he's built confidence in himself.
All right, you touched on some of the new guys that are helping out the rookies. Carl Nassib is one of those guys. Had an impressive game. Here was his thoughts after the game.
It was good. I was just trying to hustle my hardest and make as many plays as possible. You know, in the locker room before the game, I was keeping more quiet to myself because I didn't want to like scare anybody or annoy anybody. When I got on the field, I couldn't hold it in, and I was having some fun.
Matt, when you go out there for the first time wearing an NFL uniform, after playing in front of thousands in college, especially like Nassib, I mean, what's that feeling like? It's totally different, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I mean, there are moments when you first walk in for your preseason game, and of course, the regular season is going to be even on a whole nother level. But you walk in, I know I did a 360 on that, and we're actually playing at Reliant Stadium against the Houston Texans. I had to take it all in to see the fans start to trickle in, to look down at the grass and realize that there's NFL markings all over this grass. And you have that sense of, I made it moment. And I think for Carl Nassib, the fact that you heard him say he couldn't hold back, and that's for an emotional guy, and Nathan, you can attest to this, he's a crazy guy, a little off the wall, and like you said, he didn't want to freak out any of his teammates, but I think for a guy like Carl Nassib, where we drafted him, and to see what we got out of him in game one is for me, an optimistic view on Carl Nassib and the role he can play in this defense.
I'm excited about Carl Nassib, and yes, he is a little wild. I'm sure fans of First Energy Stadium will hear how he fires himself up. It's pretty intense, but he goes out there, his punch is incredibly strong at the point of attack. I thought that was good. And you talk about a relentless motor. The screenplay where he was kind of got sucked in and then chased that down and saved probably 20 yards with a shoestring tackle. And then the sack was a play where he did not give up, ended up chasing down the quarterback and getting it done. I'm excited about Carl Nassib. I think he was a guy who missed some time in the offseason. To see him come out, I think that was one of the big standouts in this game.
All right, not only rookies but free agents also seeing their first time. And Raheem Morris, one of those guys as well.
Oh, it was awesome. I felt reborn again. It was a great opportunity for me to go out there and have some fun and be out there with my teammates. When I first put that uniform on, I knew something special about it. Man, I'm just being very honest. You know, I changed my number up. I got my senior on my back of my jersey. So it was a great coming out party. I wish we'd have won today, but we got a lot of work to do.
Nathan, Raheem Moore and other free agents making an impact, and you touched on that a little bit too, but it's kind of nice to see that veteran influence with these young guys.
It is, and I want to talk about Raheem Moore because I was on the other end of that interview there. That was emotional. He cares about this. He just had twins. He's excited to be a father. He said, they count on me now. Changed his number 20 because he was an Ed Reed fan. And just, I think that he realizes it's a guy with a lot of talent, and this is an opportunity to make something happen. And I think he's very excited to be here. But you look at the free agents, DeMario Davis, and I know you got to talk to him during the game.
Awesome.
What an impact this guy's going to make on the field, off the field, in the locker room. He's been the leader. Everybody cited him as the quarterback of this defense. Ray Horton singled him out, saying, this is a guy who really is going to be my main voice.
Absolutely. And I think for guys like RG3, signed as a free agent, guys like Raheem Moore, they might feel like this is their last viable opportunity in the National Football League to be a starter. They might hang around for a while, you know, make some money and be a backup, but they're not satisfied with that. And I think that's where the emotion for guys like RG3 and Raheem Moore really come into place. They are grateful for the opportunity that Sashi Brown and the Cleveland Browns have given them, and they're humbled, and that's why they're willing to work and be the leaders and be emotional, wear their heart on the sleeve for the Cleveland Browns, and to don that uniform with the Cleveland across the chest and the dog pound in the back means something to a guy like Raheem Moore.
I think the other thing about, we were talking about DeMario Davis too. I mean, three kids under 2 years old with one coming here in September. That's a lot of diapers. You guys know that.
Prolific.
All right, still more to come on the Dog Pound Report. We're going to take a look inside some of the latest news from training camp over the past week, and we'll look ahead to what you'll be looking forward to on Thursday night. Dog Pound Report. We're taking a look back at what happened in Green Bay on Friday night, and we're going to look ahead here in just a few moments. Let's talk about RG3. And, he took the ball down the field that first drive. It was exciting to watch. He had energy. He had passion. And everybody seemed to be on the same page. Even the offensive line, even with little mishaps here and there, they were all on the same page. And I think the thing about RG3 that impressed me the most wasn't the play on the field, was watching him on the sidelines constantly talk to people over and over again. Because you got Gary Barnage on that play that looked like it could have been a touchdown turned into an interception. He was talking to him for almost a quarter after that. Your thoughts on RG3?
Yeah, he's embraced the role of being the leader and the quarterback of this football team. And I thought RG3 came out, he had a good game, the big first pass. And I thought the pass to Terrell Pryor on third down was the best. Went through all of his progressions, came back to Pryor, threw a strike in there. He took some hits. That's always a question with Robert Griffin III, and looked good in there. Obviously, the interception seemed to be maybe a little miscommunication with him and Barnage. But you talk about him on the sideline, Andy. He was over there talking with Barnage. And when Cody Kessler went in, he and McCown were the first two guys after that touchdown to congratulate him. And you know who spent a lot of time with RG3? Corey Coleman was in every quarterback huddle on the sideline, and I loved seeing that.
That's a great thing. And just really quickly, RG3, the one thing that I loved was – A young, immature RG3 early in his league, when that pocket began to break down, it was 2 seconds and I'm out. I'm going to use my athleticism. Right. And that's when RG3 got hurt. That's when RG3 is throwing on the run and he's not as accurate. He stood in that pocket, which is what Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton have coached him over the last 5 months to do. And he was able to deliver it down the field. And, of course, I think that, and I'll have to go back and watch it, but I think that RG3 touchdown, he gets, or the interception, he gets blamed there. But I don't know if it might be Barnage, might be just a little bit out of sync, and with Barnage want to bend that in behind that linebacker in front of the safety more than, and RG3 threw it to a spot.
All right, here's what RG3 had to say about his performance on Friday night.
You know, like I said, it's an honor. It's an honor to be, you know, 1-32 in this league. So you take that, you respect that, and you continue to go out and work and try to get better. No, every day you come out here, you work hard. You try to execute the offense to the best of your ability. So, you know, it's an everyday thing. There's never a day off. There's never a sense of relief. You constantly got to be working to get better.
No, we had a chance to talk to him on Thursday. Nathan, we were in that big group with him. And I just really feel like he is embracing this second chance like nobody understands.
Oh, I think he feels like he has a lot to prove and a chip on his shoulder. Robert Griffin III believes in himself and believes this is the opportunity paired with Hugh Jackson to show the world what he's capable of.
Yeah, there's pressure on this guy. He's got to right a lot of wrongs because the national narrative is that he's a bad guy personally and not quite the quarterback that he was drafted to overall.
All right, so you saw this on the field. There were some things you probably didn't see on the field, and that was Joe Hayden. Now, Joe didn't play because he's hurt, but Joe was in every conversation you could see in the sidelines, and he was excited to return back to practice this week.
I think they're doing a really good job of just taking their time. You know, I think a lot of it is precaution, just making sure that they're knowing that it's no rush right now to get back, but just trying to get back as soon as possible. And whenever I'm ready, like full percent to be able to go, then they'll put me back in there. Knowing that when I come back, just being able to have a full secondary and start to make those calls, make those checks. I don't think that we're too far behind, but we definitely got some catching up to do with the offense.
All right, we talked about the teaching points. Having Joe Hayden back is going to cut down on teaching points. What does it mean to have him back?
It definitely is, and I think, as I've said before, I believe that Ray Horton can open up many pages of his playbook when you have a guy like Joe Hayden because it allows you to do so many more things. And I do believe that while some people might have the narrative that they expect, even though Joe Hayden might have that ankle injury, that we rest him until it matters.
Sure.
I think Joe Hayden needs to get out there and get some live action in these games. And I think that's something that Ray Horton can do with his calls to make sure he gets out there, he gets comfortable and competitive again, which he hasn't in a long time.
All right, going back to the whole flow of things, and, you know, you talk about RG3. He's also working with a new center in Cam Irving, who's getting used to his positioning and being a center in every game. Here's what Cam had to say.
Well, it's been coming along really well, man. I've just continued to just learn and be a student of the game. I've been listening to the older guys, picking up on every piece of knowledge that I can, and just going out there and playing ball, man. That's all it is, and that's all I wanted to be, is playing ball.
What did you think of Cam on Friday night?
Some good, some bad. It was good to see him out there. I think technique-wise, he's obviously much more comfortable at the center position. There seemed to be some miscommunications, though, whether it be between he and Isaiah Crowell or the line. But I like to see him back out there. It's got to get better. And he talked about, as a guy who missed practice time, having now this full week here where they should get all five guys together.
Yes.
That's going to help build that continuity.
And that's been the key, I think. And Hugh Jackson mentioned it in his postgame. Just having Greco's missed some time. There's been questions at right tackle. And I think Austin Pastore is that guy that's falling in line as the potential starter there. Cam Irving has missed time as well. So they have the continuity of all five guys and be able to build that for 1 week straight and then go out against Atlanta and play a series or two or three is going to be a great thing for them.
All right, as we kind of keep recapping what we got at camp last week, Seth DeVolve comes back at tight end, and it's a great race, I think, for backup tight end. Just your thoughts. I love watching the tight ends, and to have him back in the mix, the competition gets even tighter.
Well, they made an investment in this guy in the fourth round, so they obviously like Seth DeVolve, but he's got to get out there. Connor Hamlett has looked very good, and if Josh McCown weren't just a little over the line of scrimmage, he would have had a touchdown in the first preseason game. E.J. Bibbs, we know how solid he is, and then they like Randall Telfer, the guy they drafted in the sixth round last season as a big physical guy, so it's important for DeVolve to get out there. He's supposed to be that mismatch tight end, another weapon in the passing game. The guy looks like a genetic freak. I'm excited to see him out there.
All right, we talked about the tight ends. Let's talk about the wide receivers, and we get the coach's perspective, Al Saunders, on this.
I tell you what, it's exciting. you know, really. I mean, working with those guys and the effort and energy they put forward ever since OTAs, the hard work they're doing on the field, watching every one of those guys improve in their technique and skill, and, you know, it's a wonderful group. My goal is, first of all, is that every single guy sitting in this room has an opportunity to enjoy a career in the National Football League, some way, shape, or form. You know, there's only so many seats in our boat, but there are a lot of lifeboats out there around the league that they may have an opportunity to fill.
All right, let's talk about the boat. How many guys are going to be in there with a paddle, and how many are going to be swimming for another team?
At this point right now, after one preseason game, we really don't know. Could it be six? Could it be seven? I know the injury to Ronnell Hall, who will probably hit the injury reserve, will affect that number. But I'll tell you what, I love what Al Saunders said, and this just goes to show how much he actually cares about, A, his job with the Cleveland Browns, and then the 10 or 12 guys that make up his wide receiver room. He understands there's only going to be six or seven seats in that boat, but he's going to coach them hard so that if they don't make it here in Cleveland, they have an opportunity to take his coaching and catch on somewhere else.
All right, Matt, looking forward to talking to you throughout the week. When we come back, the Mad Scribble, Andrew Gribble, breaks down the Browns through training camp and looks ahead to Atlanta. We bring in the Mad Scribble, Andrew Gribble, ClevelandBrowns.com. We had a second to talk after the game. Your impressions of what we saw in Green Bay the other night?
Yeah, I think it's what you're going to see in a first preseason game. And I think there was, you know, some encouraging moments from the offense, some big plays from both Robert Griffin III on his first play, Cody Kessler on his first play, but just, you know, a lot of mistakes. And I think the troubling ones are the ones that caused the ball to go to the other team. I think the Mostert fumble on the safety punt and just the botched handoff with Robert Griffin III and Isaiah Crowell, those are things you don't want to see and what you'll hope to get cleaned up by Thursday.
All right, plenty of battles going on in camp and still things trying to play out a little bit. Let's get a little perspective on the defensive secondary. Ibrahim Campbell had a chance to speak.
It was a tremendous opportunity to come in and be running with the ones this year, and I made sure that I kind of did everything I could in preparation for that opportunity, and I've just been working every day to make sure that I took full advantage of it, because no matter how much film you watch and those types of things, there's no substitute for experiences. So I'm cherishing every opportunity that I have on the field, every rep that I get in practice, whether it be individual drills, whether it be team drills, 7-on-7. I'm always trying to make sure that I'm making the most of those reps.
Nathan, a lot of get-to-know-me's going on in the secondary. Just your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a young group. You got two new starters at safety. Jordan Poyer and Ibrahim Campbell are the early favorites there. And Ibrahim Campbell's a guy that the coaches absolutely love. Former fourth-round pick out of Northwestern. Very intelligent football player. Ray Horton was telling us that we almost want him to be more vocal because he's so right on in his reads that they want to see more of him. But I think Campbell's really locked in. I think Poyer's the favorite at free safety, but Raheem Moore will push him.
Right. It's a new group, but I think it's a pretty stable group as we look at it right now, because you've got Poyer and Campbell who have really worked with the ones since the start of spring. Raheem Moore is a good veteran presence that I'm sure he would love to start and is going to push Poyer over these next few weeks. And then there's Derek Kindred, who is kind of like the Ibrahim Campbell of last year, fourth round pick, who's probably going to make his biggest impact on special teams. And he did that on Friday and got a shout out from Hugh Jackson yesterday.
One of the odd things in the game, obviously on Friday, three safeties. Cody Kessler was a part of two of those. What do you think of the young quarterback in his first experience walking out there at Lambeau Field?
So I had the opportunity when we were boarding the team flight up. I walked up the long stairs with Cody Kessler. And so we got to talk about the game, and he's like, man, talk about the best of times and the worst of times. He said, my first play, the touchdown, as you see it here, a beautiful back shoulder throw to Hollywood Higgins. That was right in front of me, and it was funny. He told Higgins that if this guy presses you, I'm throwing the back shoulder. Be ready. That's what they got. So you like that recognition, perfectly thrown ball. And then, of course, you had the issues with the safety. Now, that field's a little bit tough to see. It's a thin line and then another thin line. He thought he was still in bounds, but obviously something he's got to clean up. And on the last play, he told me he was really frustrated because he tried to step up in the pocket and Ricardo Lewis had broken free. He said, if I just could have gotten that ball in the air, that would have been a walk-off touchdown, and he was excited about it. But good learning experience for him. That's what he said to me. He said, I kind of got that. I got my feet wet. That's behind me now. And Cody Kessler had fun out there. Some good, some not so good.
You got plenty of room to grow. And I think the one thing you don't have to worry about is him getting false confidence out of this first start. I think that maybe you would have if he had played that one play and thrown a touchdown and thought that this was the easiest thing in the world. But, you know, I think he's going to learn from those mistakes when he's in the season. That line between those two lines is going to be a shade of green or something along those lines to help him out. But as Hugh Jackson said, really no excuses on that kind of play. I'm sure he'll never do that again, but there's probably going to be more mistakes in the future, and that's why he's someone that you would like to grow and develop and probably be that third guy in your quarterback room.
I don't think I've ever noticed the back of the end zone not being filled in white until that was on on Friday night. Let's move forward now. Atlanta on Thursday night. How long do we expect the starters to play in this one? Who's going to try to get more work in, and what battles should we watch for on Thursday?
Well, I think first off, I look at the defense because they only got one series. It was a really long one on Friday, but I would expect a little bit more out of that group. Maybe you get a kind of a rebound performance against the run because I think they would have liked it done better. Even though they didn't allow any points, they want to make some stops and get off the field in a little bit faster fashion. Maybe a couple more series out of the offense and maybe try to establish a running game, which really one carry for both Crow and Duke. You're going to do more than that in the season.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're going to see more of the first team. I'd say they get into the second quarter this time, so multiple drives, and hopefully Corey Coleman's back, hopefully Hawkins is back, maybe even Josh Gordon, so we'll really see them open it up. But what I'm interested to see is how the wide receivers are used, because those rookies didn't get in there until very late in the game. Hollywood Higgins had a touchdown, Kessler's first pass touchdown, Higgins' first catch touchdown, to see how that playing time divvies out, because I think that's going to be a big battle. And then defensively, what changes are made? Does Tracy Howard ascend after a very good game? Does Dominique Alexander ascend? I think you're going to learn a lot about how the coaches felt about this first game by the way the lineups change in game 2.
All right, it's your turn on Dog Pound Report. Next, we'll answer some Twitter questions. Stick around. All right, we're almost about to put a bow on the show. Let's go to Twitter, and let's get a question in from Twitter. Antone16 asks, do you think Corey Coleman has what it takes to lead the team to victory, with the question emoji?
Look at that emoji right there. I like that. Corey Coleman, I don't know if he has what it takes to lead the team to victory. I think he can be a piece of that puzzle, but I like the But I do think he has what it takes to lead this team in receiving. But I'll tell you what, after what Emmanuel Ogba did, he's going to have a tall order to be the most impressive rookie on the field. Ogba led the team in pressures, tackles, sacks. He looked like a monster, Gribbs.
Right, yeah, and I'll go back to Coleman just for a little bit. You look around the league, you look at guys like Odell Beckham, you look at DeSean Jackson type of guy. He can make game-changing plays. I think that's why you brought Corey Coleman to this roster. But, you know, last year Odell Beckham was on a Giants team that didn't make the playoffs. They didn't have enough around him to really get the best out of that team. So he's a piece of what you need for a team to be great, but you need much more around him to be great.
Is he healthy for Thursday night? Let's just stop
there. I would expect him to go this week. Just kind of from what I've heard, I think they're ready. If it was a regular season game, he would have played. And so I think they're just being smart, but I think he'll be ready to go.
Exercising extreme caution with a guy of his caliber. You don't want to extend a hamstring injury, which we saw a lot of last year, guys getting out there a little too soon and make it ruin their regular season.
All right, let's tell you what's coming up on Thursday night. Yeah. We will start things off with building the Browns at 7 o'clock. Then we are all back, the whole Hee-Haw clan, at 7:30 for Browns Countdown. Looking forward to that as well. We had a lot of fun in Green Bay. We'll do it again at First Energy Stadium on Thursday night. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock, and then we have post-game coverage immediately to follow. 5 seconds and your final thought.
I loved what I saw from Ogba and Nassib. They've got to take care of the football on offense, but I love the energy and the commitment and just the passion that the young guys played with.
I'd be kind of boring. I want to see the Browns run the ball on Thursday a little bit more than we saw last week.
All right, we'll do it again on Thursday night. It was fun. Would have been nice to get a win, but that's what training camp and preseason's all about. Let's start building teaching points. That's my big takeaway from the game. That's it for Dog Pound Report. We'll see you on Thursday.